Good evening, I'm Blaine Friedlander. Welcome to Sidelines. Today, I have the coach of the softball team here at Cornell, that's Dick Blood. Welcome, Dick.
Pleasure
Welcome
to be
to Sidelines.
Here. Pleasure to be here, thank you.
Now, your softball team starts its 2010 season this weekend at George Mason University. It's got to be great to hear play ball.
Eager to get out there. We've been trapped inside for 5 or 6 weeks now in the Raymond Turf Room at Bartels Hall, and we've been outside on the turf 4 or 5 times in the cold weather. Went out last night again at 6:30, but it'd be nice to be on some green grass.
Now, you're on the artificial turf to practice. You don't have a field.
No, we don't have
grass
a field.
Field
we play off campus in a regular grass and clay field, but we've been able to use the Sholkoff Stadium and the Dodson Field out behind Bartels Hall for an hour session at a time, get some fly balls, ground balls, a feel for the outdoors.
How's it? What's it like to practice in the cold weather like that instead of Florida or Arizona?
Well, I think it's a lot of teams think we're a cold weather team, but most of our season is spent inside, in preseason is spent inside. So we sometimes go unprepared. We're going to play in George Mason University. They'll be outside the whole spring. So we're really a cold weather team that plays in warm weather.
Well, in relative terms, let's talk about the softball team in terms of history. The team started in 1993, actually took the field in 1994 for the first time. And you've been here since 96. You've had a lot of success since 96 when you arrived.
Well, Jim Johnson really got the ball rolling. He did a fantastic job of recruiting. He brought in the cornerstone of the program, Julie Westbrock, who I think won 78 games in her career, and that certainly helped jumpstart things. We went out west and got a bunch of players to start us rolling, and then we realized that we could find a lot of attractive candidates back east as well, so we've started to try to recruit nationwide. So it worked out really well for us and got a fantastic coaching staff on tap, and we've had good luck. Had some good luck. You have to have luck in this game. It's not a sport like track or swimming where the times are what they are and what they're going to be, but we get some bad bounces sometimes, some good bounces sometimes. So you have to have lady luck and hard work.
Now, as far as recruiting, I mean, did you originally focus in California, Florida, warm weather places where they play softball and baseball year-round?
Yeah, we did. We focused on Southern California. Orange County is a hotbed for softball in the country, and then we were fortunate to get into the Midwest, and we got some really great players out of Midwest, and so now it's been a little bit of everywhere. We've got a kid coming in from Texas next year. We've had a couple of our captains were from Texas. We haven't done too well in Florida. Hope we do a better job down there, but California's been good to us as well as the Midwest. New York's been great, and Pennsylvania and New England.
Well, things have been going well for you. Last year, your team was 42-13. In fact, you guys were 15-0 at home last season. You have 7 position starters returning plus 2 starting pitchers coming back. How is 2010 shaping up?
Well, let me address the 15-0 first. We did lose a ball game to Dartmouth in the playoff series here, which doesn't go in the regular season, but that was a big loss. And we were able to turn that around the next day with a three-run home run by Lise Menneker in the championship series, so that was pretty good. But we're excited about this year. We lost a couple big boppers, Megan Rizica and Jesse Berkey, who combined to hit 22 dingers last year. That'll be a big hole to fill, but we'll play around a little differently in the outfield this year, probably some singles hitters. Marissa Amorian, Cassie Walczak will have to fill in. We're not asking them to hit a lot of home runs, but we're asking them to get on base, and so the big boppers can drive them in. So we're excited about it. Our pitching staff's returned, and we're going to be quietly confident.
Quietly confident?
Quietly confident, yes.
Great. Well, before we talk about that quietly confidence,
sure.
Quiet confidence, I want to talk about you, a little bit of background on you. You have an interesting background as far as obviously a baseball fan, but mm-hmm. You were an umpire in single A.
Yeah, well, you know, I that wasn't my original plan. My plan was to go to college and play Major League Baseball, but there are only a select few that ever make it to that level. You got to be awfully talented. You got to be pretty durable. I was neither, really. A little talented and not very durable. But when I was teaching school, I was a high school English teacher back in New Hampshire, and I had a suggestion, maybe you could make a charge at the major leagues by getting in there as an umpire. So I went to Bill Kinnaman's umpiring school in Southern California, got an assignment from there. There were 156 guys in school, eight got assigned. I was fortunate to be one of those assigned to the New York Penn League, which is short A, and a spirited league, I might add, a very spirited league with a lot of fans at ball games and a lot of interchanges, some interesting stories.
Oh, so what is it like to ump? I mean, what is it like to be behind the plate or out in the field?
Well, one of the things I think people don't understand is you have no fan base if you're an umpire. Every decision you make is met with controversy or at least met with dismay by one side. One group likes the decision you made, the other group doesn't. Like making coaching decisions sometimes, making out a lineup, more people are dissatisfied than satisfied. And one of the things we often talk about is you have no home crowd. You're always on the road. At least the major league ball players and minor league ball players are home half the time. You're on the road all the time. So it's difficult.
Well, what makes it difficult? I mean, any stories that you have that come to mind about umpiring?
Sure. I remember many stories. I remember one story about Dick Berardino in the Elmira Red Sox down at Dunn Field. I was my partner. It's a two-man system in the minor leagues. My partner was on the bases. I had the plate, and there was a ball hit into shallow left center field. Mm-hmm. The ball was sinking, and I turned to look at my partner. He was going to go out on the ball, and he'd stumbled and fallen. So I ripped off my mask and sprinted towards shortstop area. No idea whether the ball was caught or not, but I saw the outfielder kind of stumble and reach backwards for the ball. So I signaled, no catch, no catch, emphatically. I turned around. Berardino's already out on me. He wants to know what, in so many words, what was the call. And I said, I thought I saw him reach for the ball. I got no catch. The next play is a line shot double play, and I turned to the dugout, and I go, God knows. And Berardino just threw his hands at me. So a lot of interesting things. The next night, I ripped my shorts. So you never know what's going to happen.
Didn't have
not a good series.
Not a good series in Elmira.
No. But had fond memories of those a couple years. It brings you to the game. The thing I cherish the most is I love being behind the catcher with a 90, 95 mile an hour fastball coming in or a ball that moves. It's really an exciting part. I like to watch a lot of our baseball practices here at Cornell. I get right in behind the backstop and watch action there too. I like to see the ball move, and I like that part of the game.
So that's what you're looking for is the ball movement?
Yeah, I love ball movement. I was a catcher in college, and I love to be back there where the action is.
Now, as a coach now at Cornell, what's your point of view when an umpire blows a call, things go wrong with an umpire? Do you have any ideas?
Well, Julie Platt, my assistant, kept me grounded. You had a tendency to be to get a little too loud when I didn't need to be. I try to be understanding of the umpire's position. I want them to be in position. I want them to hustle. I understand they're going to make decision problems. I want an umpire to make sure. I never challenge balls and strikes, although I may let them know in between innings, need to bend over a little bit more or whatnot, but I try to be a professional about it. And I was ejected out of a ball game a couple years ago. I'm not very proud of that, but it's the first time in my career as a player or as a coach, and that isn't going to happen again.
When it comes to balls and strikes, you don't argue it except between. What do you say to an umpire if they're calling a bad game?
Sometimes I'll go out in between innings and I'll say, you know, we're really trying to work the ball down and away and in the strike zone. Can you give us a better look? Just try to go at it that way, and hopefully if you treat them like a professional, hopefully they'll work hard for you.
Well, speaking of baseball, as a coach, you prefer a baseball-style approach to the game of softball. Can you explain to the fans who haven't seen your team maybe why you have no visors, no shorts, no singing?
Well, we wear hats and we wear pants. Want to play an aggressive style of softball. And far too many times I've seen teams where the players shading their eyes from the sun or from the wet conditions. Put a hat on or a visor and play the game the way it was meant to be played. We try to play a baseball style. Not that it's wrong. That's the way we prefer to do it. Our kids play hard, and we don't allow orchestrated cheering in the dugouts. We consider it a distraction. Our kids pay attention to the ball game. They should know what the signs and the signals of the other clubs are as best they can, as certainly our own signals. So we just try to pay attention to detail and play the game hard. Hard-nosed type style softball, I think.
How do you teach your players to pick up signs?
Well, we don't really pick up too many of the other team's signs. We just try to pay attention to tendencies. Many times the acknowledgement of a signal is the best way to pick up a signal. If a third base coach gives a signal to the hitter and they nod their head or tip the cap, or sometimes that's an acknowledgement that something might be on. So we just try to pay attention to tendencies, but more importantly, make sure we pay attention to our own signals and our own tendencies.
So the receiving player is telegraphing to you that something's on?
I think most of the time, sure. Players have a tendency to get not necessarily nervous, but they look down and they're looking, and then sometimes, of course, they miss the sign and ask for timeout, and that ruins everything for both ball clubs. It takes the surprise element of surprise away.
I'd like to talk about some of your players on this year's team. You've got pitcher and senior Elizabeth Dalrymple, 19-5 last year, nearly a 20-game winner in a 55-game season. ERA 1.42, 150 innings pitched, Cy Young wanted numbers like that.
Yeah. We call her Dusty Dalrymple, and Allie Tomlinson, Tommy. They're both juniors this year. They both had fantastic years last year. Tommy's coming back from shoulder surgery, but she's at 100%. She threw 7 innings this past weekend. We're excited about her coming back. They both have a different assortment of pitches. They have quite an arsenal. Dusty's an up-and-down pitcher. Tommy's more of a side-to-side pitcher, east-west, with a nice two-ball, which is our drop curve. And Dusty throws the ball under the hitter's elbows if she can, and then can break the ball away too. They're both dynamic. They both are really good athletes. They both train really hard in the weight room, and they both throw well overhand. So they defend the mound as well as they're integral parts of the defense.
Well, speaking of pitching, and I'd like to kind of talk to you about pitching. Mm-hmm. I've got a softball here. Can you show me? You talk about north, south, and east, west. Sure. I mean, what are the pitchers?
I feel more comfortable with the ball in my hands than any
other
time.
There you go.
We like to put pressure on individual digits. In other words, mostly on the middle finger. So many times on a curveball, for example, we'll roll the ball into a position where we can lay a middle finger on a seam, dig a fingernail in. That way we can spin the ball and keep a palm-up curveball and bring the ball across our waist. Many pitchers like to drop a curveball down and away. They may lay fingers on the sides and turn the ball over and roll the fingers across. So we like to call a sweeping curveball, so we'll dig in, put pressure on the middle finger, and sweep across, keeping the palm up and firm, as opposed to rolling the curveball down and over. At the same time, the rise ball, we want to throw with four fingers and four seams. Some pitchers throw the rise ball by laying fingers on the left sides of the seams, spin underneath the ball, so the hand is no longer behind the ball, it's under the ball. We like to, once again, dig a fingernail in, put pressure on a seam, cut underneath the ball. So you're actually cutting a rise ball, lifting a rise ball by cutting the ball coming down, as opposed to lifting the rise ball and cutting it coming up. A lot of it's about posture and balance as well. If the shoulders aren't back, the ball is probably not going to steam up. And, of course, we don't want it to steam up too soon. So Dusty is a down-and-up pitcher. She rolls a drop over where she turns the ball violent action by catching the hip and turning the ball over. I think the challenge at that point is not having the hand behind the ball. The hand behind the ball is a fastball or a drop ball. Peel drop. There are a bunch of it. There are 7 or 8 different pitches. None of our kids really throw the peel drop, although Lauren Marks from California has been very, very well schooled. She throws a peel drop that she's still experimenting with, where they literally peel up and make the ball spin down. No one really throws an effective knuckleball. I know the knuckleball is an encouraging pitch. An exciting pitch for a major leaguer, Timmy Wakefield and a bunch of guys from the past. But a knuckleball in softball is probably a four finger grip. Whether you use a seam or the fat of the ball is interesting. Most of the time, a knuckleball for kids turns into a slow drop curve. It doesn't really float or dance like a knuckleball. So there are a bunch of pitches that kids can throw. The biggest pitch right now is the changeup. There are 15 different grips for the change, but most of the kids have called what they call a California flop now, where the ball literally comes out of the back of the hand and rotates backwards. That's a backbreaker.
Now, in Major League Baseball, you hear a lot about shoulder problems with pitchers and all kinds of problems. Do you have those kinds of problems in softball because it's underhand? Or
not as many problems, but Allie Tomlinson is recovering from shoulder surgery, and we have Kristen Thomas is doing a study right now across the Northeast, with 53 pitchers involved, and she said that our kids have tremendous core stability. I give credit to Jay Anderson, our weight training staff. We really hit their weights hard. In fact, one of our kids just bench pressed 210, just recently set the school record. Our pitchers do a little different variation of their weight training, but trying to stabilize the shoulder. So yes, there are shoulder injuries in pitching in softball, but not as much. The torque on the arm and the shoulder is vicious in baseball, where you snap down and the elbow receives a lot of pressure. Not as much in softball, but there can be shoulder surgery. Shoulder injuries,
but not the elbow problems. And
no.
Okay.
There's a lot of snap up. In fact, we don't stuff the ball or lean over and pitch the ball in softball. It's a snap where we make a circle, a windmill circle, and snap up. So there is a lot of pressure on the forearm, but not on the elbow.
Well, we've talked about pitching. Let's move to a little bit more offense, mm-hmm. and talk about Ashley Garvey. She's a returning player. Had a .399 batting average last year, .979 slugging percentage, and no strikeouts.
Big numbers.
We have Allison Intihar. We also have Elise Miniker, Cassie Walczak, and Marissa Amarayan.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some. Those are players who batted over .300 last season.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the St. Louis Cardinals, Murderers Row.
Well, we're excited about them. We really are. Devin Marsh is going to be a second baseman, and Izzy Pines, the two seniors that are hit the ball very, very well as well, and run the bases pretty well. We got some pop at the top of the order. We're going to need to fill in a couple holes that were lost to graduation, caused by graduation. And we like the production that those kids did, but, you know, the pitching in the league is, I know Harvard's pitching is really, really tough. We couldn't hit Devin Lindsay from Dartmouth last year, mixing the speeds, and everybody's trying to keep hitters off balance. So we've got to pay attention to detail and make sure we put the ball in play, get base runners on, and get timely hits. I know that a lot of our games were one-run ball games last year as a result of putting the ball in play and sometimes playing small balls, not just big boppers.
So you play a lot of small ball? You're anticipating small ball this season?
We'll play enough. We like to play the percentages. We don't play hunches. This isn't a game of hunches. The hunches go to the losers. You got to play percentages, move the runners, and get them in. Get them over, get them in, right? Get them on, get them over, get them in.
That's right.
Yeah. So Intihar had a big year for us in the leadoff role. She's prototypically probably a three-hitter, but we're going to use her in the leadoff role. She did such a fantastic job. She got struck by 18 pitches last year. She holds her ground. And we've been talking to the NCAA about that. They call many, many times, and umpire will say, time, you're staying right here. You didn't try to get out of the way of the ball. If the ball's in the batter's box and it hits a batter, that batter ought to get first base. I remember Pete Rose saying, if you're crazy enough to get hit by a ball, you get first base.
Well, and how's the NCAA responded? Any response to that?
Yeah, they've asked me to write up a proposal for the next national convention, making sure I don't outline a reference to baseball, make it a reference to softball, that if the ball's pitched where it shouldn't be pitched, the runner gets first base. So we'll see what happens at the next convention.
Well, we've talked about pitching. We've talked about offense. Defense is also part of the game. What are the team strengths for this upcoming season?
I like to use the term, I think our infield is dirt tough. Our kids get down and take a ball with a knee. They just do a fantastic job. Devin Marsh and Allison Intihar, when they were freshmen, were on the right side of the infield. They were the wall. They wouldn't let a ball through, and they could go back and get balls as well. Now, of course, they play the middle of the infield. And as we all know, baseball fans and softball fans know, strength is up the middle. Mm-hmm. Our catcher has a world-class arm back there, Vanessa Leonard, just a tremendous throwing arm and a great blocker. She's a 6'1" kid out of British Columbia, Canada. And then Intihar is at short, and March is at second, along with Izzy Pines. They're just really, really tough. Maniker is over at third. She's at the hot corner. She's tough over there. And Garvey, I don't think there's a finer player in the Ivy League than Garvey. She's just a natural out of Massachusetts. She's a ball player. And I remember Honus Wagner saying, there ain't much to being a ball player if you're a ball player.
Well, that's a great way to end this interview with a reference to Honus Wagner.
Yeah.
Coach, I'm afraid we are out of time for today, but I really enjoyed the interview, and thank you for joining us today.
Ben, my pleasure. Appreciate it.
Well, the Big Red softball team starts their season this weekend at George Mason University in Virginia. On behalf of Coach Dick Blood, I'm Blaine Friedlander. You've been watching Sidelines. Let's go Red.